Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, and great to talk with you today about things we probably wish we didn't have, which are aches and pains and sprains and strains. And I know dealing with pain can even make a routine task uncomfortable. It can certainly affect your mood, your outlook, and when it keeps you from things like playing golf or gardening or playing with your kids or your grandkids. Of course, that affects your quality of your life. We have some help for you. Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist, athletic trainer with UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. Lori, great to have you with us.
It is good to be here on another beautiful fall day.
Yeah, and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum with us as well again, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program.
Hello, how are you?
Great,
good.
How are you?
Great.
You guys look fit, healthy, and ready to
doing
take
our
on
best.
The world.
Got a little rotator cuff tendonitis going on.
You
tendinopathy.
Got a little tendonitis?
Yeah. Oh. We have to talk about this terminology.
Yeah, what's the difference between tendonitis?
Did you get it from hanging your Christmas ornaments? Because so many people yesterday were out hanging Christmas
ornaments.
That was
me.
So beautiful.
That was.
I did too.
Stepping over the sunbathing teenager on my deck.
You know, yeah. I saw, now, and I have no stock in this company, but I saw an ad for a laser light thing that you can put in front of your house and install it, right? It takes a couple minutes to install, and then it shines up on the house and all these points of light.
Yes, I've seen those too.
Oh, have you?
Yeah.
I haven't seen them.
Yeah, it makes it look like it's kind of snowing on your house or, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, nice.
And you don't have to hang.
I love that kind of snow, the kind that doesn't require a shovel.
Right. And then you don't have to hang all these lights. So I hung mine, and then I realized that I made the epic mistake of...
Oh, wrong end of the plug.
No.
No?
Worse than that.
What?
Not checking them prior
to...
No. Are you kidding me?
I know.
Your father would turn over in his grave.
I know. So then I had to take them back down, take them all off the shrub, the little greens, and then Dave went out and bought more, and I have to redo it.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully he has no tendonitis or tendinopathy.
No, but okay. But I'm telling you, it was heavy. To hang those greens up high was heavy. It was hard on my shoulder.
Yeah.
So what is the difference between tendinitis and tendinopathy?
All right. So itis, the suffix of itis means inflammation. So tendinitis implies inflammation of a tendon. So many of the tendon problems we see don't really have an inflammatory component, which is why taking an anti-inflammatory medication doesn't really work to get them better. Tendinopathy is a more global term and tends to refer to tendon pathology that is usually the result of degeneration. So a lot of times what we see or what they've seen on pathology when they've examined these tendons, they've gone in surgically for different things and they've taken biopsies of these, is they see degeneration of the tendon. So we tend to refer to these problems as tendinopathies, not necessarily tendinitises. Now, younger people who go out and, you know, decide they're going to play in a basketball tournament all day can certainly get a legitimate tendinitis, and that is responsive to traditional anti-inflammatory types of interventions. But a lot of what we see is actually tendinopathy.
Mm-hmm. And that does not – and then how do you deal with it?
Well, there's the million-dollar
question. That's a million-dollar
question.
So because
–
thank you. Because it doesn't have an anti-inflammatory component, taking anti-inflammatories are not that effective. So what we know is that the tendon has degraded or become weaker. And the analogy I like to give people is the rubber band analogy. When you have a brand new rubber band, it's pliable, it's stretchy, you don't worry about it tearing, anything like that. That's kind of what a young, healthy tendon is like, as opposed to the tendon that's wrapped around newspapers in your grandmother's attic for 15 years. And you go upstairs and you find it, and you're afraid if you pull on that rubber band that it's going to snap, right? And it's got fraying, and that's kind of the analogy I use with tendons as we age.
Mm-hmm.
So I use the rubber band analogy a lot, and I think it works well. The million-dollar question is, how do we treat these tendons that are degraded and old and stiff?
And it's not easy, and it really has to be taken on a case-by-case basis, because how you treat a rotator cuff tendon is not the same way you treat a tennis elbow or a patellar tendon or an Achilles tendon. They all have different structure and function. For example, your Achilles tendon rotates a quarter turn as it goes down to attach to the back of your heel, and that little rotational area is a watershed area. If you bend your ankle too far, you actually get compression of the tendon, which is different than tension in the tendon. And how you do an exercise varies, and there are some ways to do it wrong. Like, you can do a heel lift wrong, believe it or not, and that will actually make your Achilles tendonitis worse. And the shoulder, the rotator cuff, it wraps around the top of the shoulder and is subject to tension, and parts of it are also subject to compression. And how you rehabilitate varies, and you need to alter the position of the shoulder based upon whether it's a compression issue or a tension issue or some combination of both. So,
wow.
So it's much more complicated than, oh, go lift some weights.
And, oh, I have some tendonitis.
Right.
It's really very, very different.
Well, Doug in Onalaska has a question for you, so let's go there, see what's on Doug's mind. Hi, thank you for calling.
Thanks for taking my call. I have lower back problems, and I see a chiropractor periodically, and the word piriformis muscle comes up a lot, and I just don't really understand how that muscle works, if it is, or how it affects the sacrum, and what are the best exercises, or what's the best way to get along with it?
Well, I'll answer the first part of that question, kind of what the piriformis is and where it sits. So the piriformis does attach to the anterior or the front side of your sacrum, and then it runs out and it attaches to your femur, or like the back of your hip bone, if you will. So what it does is it helps with some rotation at our hip. The other thing is it runs very, very close to the sciatic nerve, and in about 20% of the population, the sciatic nerve actually runs through the piriformis. So piriformis tightness can actually cause some radicular symptoms or some symptoms down your sciatic nerve.
And so if you have an overuse syndrome of your hip muscles, if you sit a lot, if you do a lot of repetitive hip work, you can get some inflammation, you can get some scarring in that piriformis muscle, you can get some tightness there, and then it puts pressure on the sciatic nerve. So sometimes when people have chronic back problems and they have symptoms down into their buttocks, into their hip, sometimes it's hard to distinguish if that pain is radiating or referred from your low back, or if it's because of pressure right in your buttocks where the piriformis is putting pressure on the sciatic nerve. And it's really, really difficult to distinguish the origin of the pain. So a lot of times when people have low back and buttock pain, we try to address the piriformis at the same time, make sure it's flexible, make sure your posture, it's your hip and low back is such that you're not putting excessive load on that muscle and the sciatic nerve.
And a lot of people have a tendency to use their piriformis more than their gluteal muscles. So sometimes it depends on how you recruit your muscles. And so sometimes doing some strengthening for the muscles around there helps. So some good gluteal strengthening sometimes will make a difference as well.
There we go. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. I'd love to hear from you. I want to go back to tendinopathy and tendinitis maybe for a bit. Tendinitis is typically treated then with anti-inflammatory.
And like anything else that has an inflammatory component, it usually settles down after that and you kind of go on your merry way. So it's a very usually short-term condition as opposed to tendinopathy where you have true degenerative changes within the tendon.
Mm-hmm. And then dealing with that, though.
Right. So the key is you want to strengthen the tendon so it can withstand the kinds of loads that you're going to put on it. But, you know, it's a very fine line between loading the tendon to strengthen it and overload it. It's particularly difficult in things like the Achilles and the patellar tendon where you walk and you get up and down out of a chair and you get in and out of a car and you go up and down stairs where you're loading your Achilles and patellar tendons all day long. So trying to find the balance of needing to use that for your daily activities and adding exercises to strengthen it specifically when it's already a little bit annoyed is a it's very difficult, and that's why it takes a long time to recover from these.
We have Nancy in Madison with a question for you. Hi, Nancy. Thanks for calling.
Okay, this is just for me because I have got, I guess, tendonitis or tendinopathy in my ankle, and I was treated for quite some time after doing exercises on two pillows, standing on two pillows for a concussion to learn balance, but it ruined my ankle. So I went on the anti-inflammatory. I wore the air cast, and then the next one down was one that laced up. I wore that, and I did exercises, but a week ago I bent down to get in a cupboard, and that tendon snaps right over the bone. And I don't know what to do with it now. I'm walking much better, but the side of my ankle bone gets very sore when I do walk, and I don't know whether I should be in the cast. I didn't continue exercises over a couple months. I did them for a couple months, and then it was better. So I don't know whether I keep doing it or I go back on anti-inflammatory or what I do.
Well, those are all very good questions. And just I'm just going to kind of explain stuff to our listeners. You know, when you had this bad episode of kind of this acute situation, it sounds like they put you in an air cast to kind of immobilize you for a few days to kind of let things calm down, and that's pretty normal. And then you were in a lace-up ankle brace, which is also another common procedure that we do just until things get kind of calmed down. It sounds to me like you're peroneal tendons, or the tendons on the outside of your, the back of your ankle, are snapping forward and back over your ankle bone. And that, unfortunately, does happen occasionally. You have a little piece of material. It's called a retinaculum. I equate it to a staple that holds the tendon in place. And if those get torn or irritated, then that tendon can start rolling around a little bit. So from a management perspective, I would say if you're having a really difficult time and you need to get back in your air cast for a few days, that that's a really good strategy for you. Mm-hmm. To let it kind of calm down.
Yeah. And if you're going to be doing anything for long periods of time, if you're going to be doing a lot of activity that requires a lot of ankle motion, you might want to think about wearing the lace-up brace just as a preventive measure.
Now, I have, but do, and I've been icing, but when I walk for any distance, it's now sore on the top of the ankle bone. Do I keep walking on it and just using it, or am I better to rest it? I don't know what to do because this seems to, I mean, all I did was bend down and it just snapped, and so painful.
Yeah. So it hurts on top of the outside ankle bone?
It started on the back where it snaps, and everything I did snap, but now that's better. I did the air cast and the lace up.
Okay.
And I did ice, but now when I walk, I'm trying to do three blocks, on the top of the ankle bone is so sore, is what happened before.
And are you wearing the ankle brace when you walk?
Not now. So should I? Because it's not that snapping.
Right. Like, yeah, I would. I would still wear it. Yeah. I would still wear it because I think it's stabilizing the tendon.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I would continue to wear that for any kind of walking any distance, at least for a while longer.
Yeah. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. I appreciate your call.
Thank you.
Yeah. Diane in Whitewater, you are next. Hi, Diane. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I have pain in the sits bones or ischial tuberosities, and I read that that can happen to people who are runners. So I have stopped running for the last 3 months, but I want to know how I could get back to running. I have been walking, but not running.
Mm. Sorry.
And what's the ischial tuberosity?
Right. It's classically called your sits bones, and that's the bottom of your pelvis, right when you sit up in a chair, that kind of pointy area that you sit on, and it's where your hamstrings attach, probably one of the biggest attachments for your hamstrings. So there's a couple different things that may be going on with Diane. If she has really, really tight muscles in the front of her hip flexors are tight, that's going to change the position of her ischial tuberosity and her pelvis a little bit. And as she runs, if she's a strider and strides out, right where that hamstring inserts on the ischial tuberosity can be really irritating. So it may be that she needs to do some stretching for the front and then modify her stride a little bit. There's some really good research out of the the University of Wisconsin, looking at what we call cadence manipulation, and increasing your step rate by about 10% will bring your feet more under you and you don't stride out as far, and it actually decreases injuries.
Yeah, but Diane has the classic presentation here where she started with some pain, and I'm not sure what started it off. Do you have any idea what started it off?
It came on gradually, I think, from running, and I thought, well, I'll just kind of push through it, which probably wasn't the right idea.
Right, but that's classic. You push through it, you don't get better, and then you stop.
Right.
And then you decide, okay, well, I'm going to try it again, and then there it is, right back where you started. So the key is you have to do the rehab in between. So Jill's right, some stretching in front, some strengthening for your hamstrings and your glutes, and as she suggested, shortening up your stride length and watching hills, you know, going up and down hills, those are going to be harder on it. So sometimes be going on a track where you can adjust your cadence and watch your cadence a little bit is easier than being out on the street. So
yeah, that makes
sense. But I get on some good gluteal strengthening, some leg press, some things like that to strengthen the back of your legs as well.
Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling, Diane. Appreciate your call very much. Talking today about all kinds of pain issues, dealing with treating tendonitis and tendinopathy, among other things, with our two guests, Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. I'm Larry Mueller. Cheyenne Lentz, our on-air producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now, taking a look at physical therapy issues with Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. Lori, physical therapist, athletic trainer with UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. Jill, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. Always great to have them here, and thank you so much for listening. We'll take another call, I think, next. Edward in Hartford up now. Edward, thank you for calling.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I had tendonitis myself in both shoulder and both elbow areas for 6.5 years.
Oh, my.
Oh, wow.
And I was just wondering how they would have treated that.
Well, geez. It's a little hard to figure that out without seeing you and knowing more of your history. Did it all come on at the same time?
Pretty much, yes, as a result of my work. I'm a chiropractor.
Oh. So that brings up a really important point, and that is when you have these overuse injuries as a result of your occupation, it gets much dicier. If you're a runner like Diane and she can switch to a walk and so on, it makes it easier to manage these. But when you are required to do this as part of your work, it gets much harder. So, you know, the first thing we'd have to do is talk about your work and if there's any way we could modify your work schedule, your work hours, get you some support so that you weren't having to do as much hands-on work. That'd be the first step. For me, if I was treating, I'd probably start with your elbows and see if we could put you in a wrist splint to rest your elbows during your work, because the wrist splint will take some of the load off the tendons in your elbow. So that would be the first easy thing that we could try to see if you could still manage your work. And then in terms of your shoulders, we would look at positioning your shoulders so that your rotator cuff was in a more optimal position, a less compressed position while you were doing your work. So we would start with how we can modify the environment that causes the most stress on your shoulders and elbows and see how far we get with that. And then we would probably proceed to a strengthening program for your shoulders and elbows, knowing it would have to move really slowly in the presence of your workload.
Right, because we talked about the strengthening exercises and what a delicate balance that is. And if you toss into the equation the person's work environment on top of this, and that's their livelihood. For Edward, for example, that's his livelihood. That just makes it all the more challenging. So for somebody like Edward, we talked about what a long process this would be. Unfortunately, it would be even longer for him just because work is a constant irritant. So it becomes very, very challenging. But I think I agree with Lori. I would probably start with the elbows and kind of work my way up. Work and see if there's any postural changes we could make while he's performing his job.
Yeah. So how did you get over them?
Well, I tried everything. I tried physical therapy. I tried medical care and even acupuncture.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing really delivered the results I was looking for. So eventually I got a flyer from one of the supplement companies that said this product helps muscles. And I thought, well, maybe it'll help my tendons if I take it. And I did, and in about 3 weeks, I was a little better.
Hmm.
So I went along with that, and I also developed some special stretching exercises that I even do today on occasion, even though I'm retired.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And between the stretching exercises and the proper use of heat and cold, you never put heat on a sore tendon, by the way.
Okay.
And I've noticed that some PTs will alternately use heat and cold on the tendon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's wrong. You never put heat on a sore tendon.
I agree. Well, it sounds like you've done well. So thank you for sharing that that story and that experience with us.
Yeah.
Great.
Thanks again for calling. I appreciate your call, Edward. I want to give Michael in DeKalb, Illinois, a chance to join in. Michael, thank you for calling. Hi.
Good morning. I'm 71 years old. I've been very physically active most all my life. And about for the past 5 years, I experienced severe cramps in my calves, both calves. I can walk about a city block and everything is fine, but when I continue after that point, they begin to cramp up and painful, and if I stop, it will go away. But I've recently taken up the game of paddleball, or pickleball.
Oh, pickleball, yeah.
And it's a great game, and
I love it.
And I'm in pain 90% of the time I'm playing, but I just try to ignore it. And my question is, am I harming myself by pushing it and dealing with the pain or?
Yep, that's a great question. So, Michael, when you said you can walk about a city block and then you stop and it gets better, do you sit down or do you just stop?
All I have to do is stop. It'll go away.
You just have to stop. Okay, because there's a couple different things that come from your spine, such as stenosis, things like that, that I'm a little bit more concerned about. There is something called vascular claudication that I'm wondering if that's a contributing factor to this.
Yeah, I would probably, before I went any farther, so I'd probably see my physician.
Correct.
and have your vascular system looked at, because mm-hmm. it does sound like you could have some vascular claudication there, and that's a narrowing of some of your blood vessels. It's most common in your calves. Mm-hmm. So the fact that you're getting it in both calves, and it's pretty classically after about a block of walking, and then you stop and rest and you're fine, and then you can go again. So I would want to get that looked at before I gave you an advice to push through it or stop.
Correct. No. I agree.
Excuse me. Is this also similar to peripheral arterial disease? I mean, is that?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So peripheral vascular disease. Yeah.
So see your physician.
Yeah, I'd see your physician,
right,
as your next stop before you did anything else.
Right. You want to make sure that you know why the cramps are coming on.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Agreed.
But pickleball is a great game.
Yeah.
You don't know
and
pickleball.
Good for you for staying so active.
Exactly.
But it sounds like you're an active person and you want to stay active.
Correct.
So you want to get to the bottom of this.
Right.
Yeah.
And take advice that's based in some medical examination.
Right.
Thanks again, Michael. Kathy and Nina, we turn to you next. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Larry. And hi, Jill and Lori.
Hi.
I appreciate your show every month when you visit. I appreciate all of Larry's shows.
Thank you.
I'm calling today because I have the middle finger, the second finger on my left hand that was sprained last May. And there was an x-ray taken. Nothing significant showed, although the middle joint is quite swollen on the left side. I buddy taped it for a little while so I wouldn't overuse it. I have to use my left arm the most because I have called before. I've had 6 right shoulder surgeries.
Oh, jeez.
That caused, with a total reverse joint replacement that was a mistake was made with the axillary nerve, so that arm is not very useful at all. But I really am calling about this finger today because in the last week or two, the tip of it and the end from the middle joint to the end has turned white and numb.
Oh, my.
Which is pretty disconcerting. I'm not sure what could be going on. The pain is pretty significant as well.
Oh. Have you seen a hand specialist at all throughout this process, Kathy, when you originally injured your finger?
I didn't see a hand specialist. I was trying acupuncture for my shoulder.
Sure. Okay.
And I had her, I requested an x-ray of that finger, and she did that. She's an MD. And she's the one who looked at that and didn't notice anything significant.
Okay. Was that prior to the turning white and numb?
Probably.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So you haven't seen anyone since it's turned whitish and numb?
That's right. That's okay. Only been in the last week or two.
Okay. That sounds neurovascular to me, and so I would go in and I'd have that looked at because you're getting some kind of neurovascular compression somewhere, and you don't want that to continue. You don't want any vascular issues in the ends of your digits.
Right,
and you have severe pain, so it needs to be seen
and
soon.
And you had mentioned swelling, so the swelling could be causing some sort of compression there, and since you really need your left hand, I would hang up the phone and call your physician and get in and get it taken care of because you need that. That's really important for you.
There you go.
I have to see a primary care today for general issues. I can bring it up to him.
That'd be great. I think that's perfect.
Yeah. Let us know how you turn out.
Yes.
To go along with that, we had an email question from Joe in Washburn who dislocated his middle finger about 8 weeks ago while sanding deep inside a bowl on his wood lathe. His finger was laying over the top of his first digit, so he pulled out, relocated, and completed his work.
Of course he did. Why wouldn't you?
Yeah, my finger was sore, somewhat stiff for a few days, and now has an arthritic type of constant ache and minimal swelling, especially after intense use. How do I rehab my finger?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Well, anytime you dislocate, kind of move a joint apart, you're at huge risk of injuring some of the ligaments and tendons around there. And they are very, very critical to hand function. So, you know, reducing it is fine. He did that. But he should be seen.
Yeah, you should have that looked at.
Yeah.
Partially because either when you dislocated it or you relocated it, there could be a small fracture in there, and that could be contributing to your pain. And it's just something you want to know, especially if you're someone who works with your hands, either as your vocation or your avocation. And then once you get it looked at and probably take a radiograph, see if there is a small fracture in there, then you can proceed based upon the appropriate information. You know, maybe you just need to buddy tape it for a while. Maybe you need to, you know, do some intervention to get the swelling down, start some rehab exercises. But again, because those ligaments, as Jill mentioned, are so vital to appropriate hand function, you probably want to get that looked at.
And there are certified hand therapists who are either physical or occupational therapists who obviously deal directly with hand in the upper quarter. And that'd be a really good person for you to see, especially if your vocation requires you to use.
Sounds like it does. He may be, if that's what he does for a living.
Yeah, exactly.
Or for fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, or for fun. You want to keep the fun going.
That's right.
Cassandra in La Crosse, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hello. Thank you, Larry. Okay, so my question is, a couple months back, I slipped a disc in my lower back, and it was quite painful and laid me up for a good while. I did go to a chiropractor and did all the exercises that she had told me to do, and it feels better. You know, it still hurts, but it's not near as bad as it was. But lately, I have been noticing that if I've been doing a lot of driving lately, and if I sit for too long, my feet go numb, like my middle toes, they go numb. And like tingling in my feet, I am wondering if that could be associated with the slipped disc in my back, or I don't know what I should do about it, I guess.
Is it both feet or is it just 1 foot?
It is both feet.
Okay, and when you originally slipped your disc, Cassandra, did you have any numbness and tingling down your legs?
I did.
Okay, does it feel the same?
It wasn't as bad as it is now.
Okay.
I was quite focused on the excruciating pain in my back.
Oh, but, sure, of course. Well,
but it just seems like it's getting worse, and it's quite discomfortable.
Yes,
sure.
Yes. Well, sitting will do it. It'll open up your lumbar spine, and it will kind of allow the disc to kind of protrude and push on your nerve roots, or allow inflammation to irritate your nerve roots. So, prolonged sitting is one of the things that can irritate disc pathology and cause those radicular type symptoms. The fact that it's worse than your first episode, though, is concerning to me. I think it sounds like you had good management the first time. It might be a good strategy to see your primary care physician and get that looked at, because we don't like progressive neurological changes as a general rule.
Right, right. And the fact that you're having it in both legs and both feet, it's not a good sign. So are you continuing the exercises you were given?
I haven't lately. My uncle is dying, and I'm having to drive from La Crosse to Wisconsin Rapids 3 times a week.
Oh, dear.
Oh, boy.
So you have you have your plate very full.
I have a lot on my plate.
Yes, you do. I would. So, yeah. Yeah. Well, and the driving and the stress.
Correct.
Will be.
Should I continue doing the exercises that she had originally given me?
If the exercises make it feel better, there are some exercises that you use at certain stages of disc injury and disc pathology that might not be appropriate at other stages. So I would say if they feel good and you feel better afterwards, go ahead and do them. If it feels like they're kind of annoying, then you're compressing the disc too much, and you should avoid those or modify them. And again, a trip to a physical therapist to reevaluate you now and see where you're at now, and modifying those exercises might be worth the time investment.
Right.
Anything you do to the car seat?
Well, that's a good question. If you can use a good lumbar roll, a really good back support that keeps you a little bit more upright instead of a slouched posture, that may help. And if you can get out of the car, let's see, is that how far is Rapids from?
Know.
2 hours?
It's a two-hour drive.
So break it up hour.
Yeah, if you can stop at least 1 point halfway through and stretch, go into extension, stand up tall, and walk around the car a couple times, that may help.
Yep, and move your seat up just a little bit.
How long should... Yeah, I have my seat up.
Good.
Like, I can't have my seat back.
Okay.
It's very uncomfortable.
Right.
But
okay.
How long when I stop? Like, I usually stop in Tolma and grab something to eat. That's like my...
Okay.
But I normally don't get out of the car. But if I get out of the car, how long should I be walking around?
5-10 minutes is probably all you need. So
it wouldn't
take that much time. And I think you'd probably see a good benefit from it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do see a PT and you just explain your situation that you have to do this driving, they can make sure that they give you exercises that accommodate your needs at this point in time, because it does sound like your plate is really full.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. All right. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Appreciate it.
Good luck.
You're welcome.
Thanks,
good luck,
Cassandra. Appreciate your call. And you can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Marty in Douglas County up next with a question. Hi, Marty.
Good morning, everybody. So 6 weeks ago, my 70-pound lab was running full steam towards me, and as soon as I thought, he's not going to hit me, he plowed into my right knee from the front.
From the front, okay.
I'm about 5'3", weigh about 110 pounds, and I'm 63 years old. Mm. So I went down, the knee went back, of course, iced it right away all night, a lot of ibuprofen, got an x-ray the next day. Miraculously, nothing was broken or bent or pulled. But as I said, that was 6 weeks ago. I'm getting some PT because, of course, when he hit me, my back went wanky, and I already have a little SI on the right side issue. So I can walk, I can work, I can do just about everything. It has put a big dent in my yoga practice because I can no longer kneel and sit back on my heels.
Mm-hmm.
That the knee it feels like it hasn't changed much for 3 to 4 weeks now in its healing. I'm getting some PT. They're working on my back. And they know that the knee is an issue. I just, maybe it, what I'm looking for is something perhaps else I could do to soften the knee up again. Maybe just a little, don't worry, it'll get better eventually.
Well, what are the issues with your knee? Is it pain? Is it instability? Is it swelling? Is it stiffness?
It's still a little swollen.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it isn't stiffness. It is pain, as I said, if I kneel and then try to sit back on my heels.
Mm-hmm. Where's the pain?
It is on the outer edge, mostly on the outside edge, a little on the inside edge of the knee.
But not in back?
Not in back.
Okay.
And just one more quick thing. You have talked about glute exercises for people. Could you give us maybe two of those exercises that we could do? Because that, too, is an issue that I would like to be addressing. So
I'll deal with the knee and let you do the glute because I know you love the glute.
I love the glute.
I know you do. So you had an X-ray of your knee, so you know nothing's broken, but you don't really know what happened with the soft tissue. I don't know if your physical therapists have evaluated that. When you have a hyperextension injury, you can sprain your anterior cruciate ligament. The collateral ligaments on the inside and outside of the knee, those are all taut when you're in full extension. So if your knee gets pushed back into hyperextension, you can sprain those. That's also the position where your knee is most congruent, and you can damage your meniscus or articular cartilage. So any of those things could be going on. Any of those things will produce swelling. Any of those can cause ongoing swelling. So, you know, you're in PT. I'd have them examine your knee, examine your ligaments. It's very simple to do the ligament laxity test to see if you have laxity in any of those three ligament groups that I mentioned. They can look at your joint lines to see if your meniscus is sore, you know, where your meniscus sits, and then give you some exercises to help deal with that. And that would include quad strengthening and glute strengthening.
Yes, it would. Excellent. So one of the things that I always like to say is nothing goes with a bad back like a great pair of legs. So, you know, a lot of people have back problems, and so strengthening your lower extremity becomes really, really important. So a really good exercise for you to do would be something we call bridges, where you lie on your back, your knees are bent, your feet are flat, and you lift your butt up in the air. And you don't have to lift it up so high that you're forcing your lumbar spine into extension, but you just need to squeeze your butt cheeks together good and strong as you get up there. Then once you're up there, you can do tiny little marches with your feet. You can kick one leg out at a time, just making sure that your pelvis stays level. It's just really important that you don't drop one side. Another really good exercise, interestingly, that has come back per EMG activity that really helps strengthen your glute are glute squeezes. So when you're sitting, literally try and squeeze one butt cheek. I know you're all doing
everyone,
it.
Everyone,
I know you're
all together now.
then you squeeze your other butt cheek, and then you squeeze them both together. And that is a really good way to make sure that your glutes know how to fire. And so just sitting and doing glute squeezes is a really easy, simple, and good exercise to do.
Right. It's a lot of it, you know, after knee surgery, anyone who's had knee surgery can tell you quadricep setting. Quadricep setting is really important, partially for strengthening, but also more so for remembering how to work. And mm-hmm. that's, I think, the point that Jill's trying to make. So remembering that your glutes are supposed to work when you stand up out of a chair, when you go up the stairs, think about using your glutes to get you up, not your quads, not leaning your trunk forward, but by using your glutes. That way they get worked constantly throughout your day.
There we go. Good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Taking a look at physical therapy issues, tendonitis, among other things, with our two guests, Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. I'm Larry Mueller. Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks so much for joining us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my two guests, Lori Tyne Brody from the UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center, Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, Associate Professor in the Department of Physical therapy program at UW-Madison. Always fun to have them along to talk about all those aches and pains and sprains and strains. And lots of people online, so I think we'll go to the phones again. And to Mary in Green Bay. Mary, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. It's kind of ironic. I was driving to my PT class when I was going to be on, so I'm thrilled to be able to speak with you. I am dealing with some Achilles tendonitis, I've been told. I went to my family checkup and then found I have this lump on the back of my left Achilles, and so sent me to PT and diagnosis as Achilles tendon. I'm a cyclist. I've done a lot of bicycling this summer. You know, I've increased it a little bit. And I would notice the pain about 20 miles into it, but would ride through it. But when it really caught my attention is when I'm trying to do yard work, like mowing the lawn and stuff, it would really bark at me. So I thought, okay, something is wrong. So I've had 8 sessions of PT. I'm coming up on my last one, and I've done some trigger point dry needling, mm-hmm. and he's got me doing some exercises. But I'm just curious, you know, if PT is going to be done, and you know how to go forward with this to get this kind of, you know, back on track. And what I've also found too is how amazing it is that how much everything is so connected. You know, if he starts to poke here or do this or that, and you know, the pain just kind of, you know, can travel up the leg. Or I've got very tight calf muscles. You know, he's been trying to break up some of that a little bit, I think, with the trigger point therapy. So I'm just curious for another opinion on how to get
when therapy's over. Honestly, if you're a cyclist and you have an Achilles tendinopathy,
therapy is never over.
You guys are great.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you're going to be, what's going to happen is you're going to manage this. You're going to learn how to manage this.
Okay.
So are you better?
It's funny. I should have probably mowed the lawn one last time.
Just to test it?
It's gotten better, but I didn't. I lost my opportunity. He's got me in some supports, arch supports, and I'm going to try those out. And there's some other things I do, like I go out, help out at the wildlife sanctuary, and some of that uneven ground can cause that. So I've got the arches in my shoe that I'm going to try out today to see if that's going to help.
Okay. So, all right. Well, yeah, you've continued strengthening, kind of slow, heavy lifting, if you can. Continuing with that is going to be really important. Trying to stay out of positions where your ankle is really flexed a lot. And I don't know if that's the issue with mowing, if you're on a hill, or if you do a lot of hill walking, that's going to be hard on it. But, you know, the PT at this point is kind of getting you, you know, out of the ditch and getting you back up onto some level of function with some control of your symptoms. Are you going to be fully cured? No. But hopefully you have enough strategies to manage this as you continue to recover over the next few months.
Right. And, you know, it's always interesting when cycling is considered a relatively symmetrical sport, why you get it on one side. So then the question is, do you always coast with that foot down and kind of your heel dropped, so your Achilles is always on stretch? Could that be the problem, and that's why you have this asymmetry? The other thing that could be causing it is a small leg length discrepancy. So if you're sitting in the saddle and you're hooked into your pedals and you have to reach more on one side or another, that could be a problem as well. And that's a pretty easy fix with a washer. You can put a washer on your clip of your pedal. And even things out. So that might be something your physical therapist should look at. So anytime you do something that should be relatively symmetrical and you get some side-to-side difference, you always have to wonder why.
Yeah, and if you have a nodule in your tendon, I would be doing some massage of that. Some relatively uncomfortable, but every day massaging that, trying to prevent any called neovascularity, infiltration of vascular supply that's not supposed to be there, and keep that from developing scar tissue as
now,
well.
Massaging it, and he does do that after that dry point needling. Yep. He does take a tool and massage that.
Yep.
He's massaging, I think, up and down. So when I do it manually, am I supposed to go along it or across it?
I do both.
Yes.
Both. Okay.
Yep.
Did you have your, were you fitted for your bicycle?
That's a good question, Larry.
I was fitted. They adjusted my clips a little bit, and that felt okay. And I didn't, you know, I haven't felt any, you know, discomfort in the fitting of the bike.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it may have been just an increase in mileage. So here's another little tidbit about that, because I have a friend who had an issue with this, with his Achilles. And when he was out biking on a windy day, and so he was having to push harder. So here's an interesting factlet about your tendons, specifically Achilles. Each muscle fiber in your muscles is attached to a tendon fascicle. So when you're using your calf muscles and you're biking at your typical pace and your typical distance, you're kind of using the same muscle fibers and their associated tendon fascicles at the same rate. But if you have a ride that's hard, it's more hills, it's longer, it's windy, and you have to push harder, you're actually using tendon fascicles that have been sitting in their Barca lounger all along and are being stressed. And so sometimes a hard ride can stir things up because you're overworking stuff beyond your usual training level. And that's why strengthening above and beyond your usual daily activities is so important, so that the tendon can tolerate those loads when they meet them.
Mary, good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. I want to give Karen and Madison a chance to join us. Karen, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I'm a person in her 70s, and for some years I've been exercising twice a week with women of similar age in a class where we do both strength and cardiovascular work. And I'm used to using 10-pound free weights for things like bicep curls and presses and such. And lately I've noticed that my right forearm, left forearm tendon has gotten very sore, so I'm not working it with any weight now. And just wonder, am I just kind of have to bite the bullet and start lifting lower weights just due to age? What do you recommend?
No, not because of your age. No, we're not going to worry about that. We're going to keep you fighting. That's what we're going to do. So one of the questions that always comes in with forearm, like tendonitis or tendinosis type issues, is grip. And so depending on how you have to grip the weight, that could be a contributing factor. So are they kind of the classic dumbbells, Karen, where you have to kind of grip kind of a closed, tight fist grip around the dumbbells?
Yes, although interesting you should mention it, because they got a new set of weights. Instead of having a larger bar that you grip with a soft, rubber coating, it now is a smaller metal.
Okay, so it's a change.
So my guess is the grip has subtly changed because of that.
Yeah, I'm wondering if that's a contributing factor.
Right, because you're in more flexion.
Correct.
So if you're gripping and your fingers are flexed more, then the extensors on the top part of your forearm have to work harder to counterbalance the flexion. So
if you could go back to the other weights.
Yeah, exactly. You go back to the other weights?
Yes. Or I can just locate another set of weights elsewhere.
Sure.
Yeah.
Or if there's any way you can wrap something around it to make the diameter bigger.
Good.
Yeah.
But I'm assuming I'm going to have to let it rest because it hurts. So.
Yeah, I would do some... I would do some stretching, and then I would try some with lighter weight. Mm-hmm. So don't just completely rest, but do what we call active rest. So I would try a lighter weight in that hand and see if that makes a difference. And I'd try again, if you can make the diameter of your grip bigger, that would be helpful.
Yep, and work your way back up.
Yep.
And Jim in Green Bay, thank you. Let's see here. Oh, I'm sorry. Emily in Racine, thank you for calling. Hi. We got Emily?
Hello?
Emory.
Oh, it's Henry, H-E-N-R-Y.
Oh, it's Henry. Hi, Henry.
Yes.
And your question?
Well, I had rotator cuff repair done back in on my right shoulder back in 2003, and I had a pretty rapid recovery, and I started playing tennis. In fact, I played about 5 to 7 days a week up until 2011 when I had a stroke. And I don't have any use of my left hand or arm as a result of the stroke, So I do everything with my right hand and arm, and now I'm suffering from overuse.
Yes.
And it feels like it's in the rotator cuff, having gone through that. I mean, it may not be, maybe other things as well, but I'm just wondering what you'd recommend in the way of any exercises or weights or anything I should do to maybe regain some strength in that without hurting it.
Absolutely. That's a great question, and it sounds like you're a pretty active guy, and now you're relying a little bit more on that right upper extremity. So it would be very beneficial for you to see a physical therapist and not only strengthen your shoulder, but make sure that the rest of your arm is strong and your back muscles are strong as well. So you may have a little bit of tendinopathy in that rotator cuff. You're absolutely right, but this would be a really good time for you to make sure that everything is good and strong.
Yeah, because you're going to be asymmetrical. Mm-hmm. So, you know, people tend to be left right sided and one side counterbalances the other, but you don't have a great counterbalance. So how you use your shoulders different from other people. So I would really want you to have to be seen by someone who can look at you and make sure that everything is being done correctly and in the best interest of your spine and shoulder.
Yeah. So do that, Henry, and thank you so much for calling today. Appreciate your call. And I hope you'll join in, too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org. We're going to take a look at the news and weather, find out what else is in store for us. Then we'll be back with Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. You stay with us. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along today. As we take a look at new injuries and old injuries and all those things that cause aches and pains, it might be tendonitis or tendinopathy. Our two guests, Lori Tyne Brody, physical therapist and athletic trainer with UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center. Lori, thank you so much for being here.
Excellent to be here.
And Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, thank you so much. She's an associate professor in the Department of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison, staff physical therapist as well.
Yay, go Bucky.
Yay, go Bucky.
Go Bucky.
And we have lots of callers online, and we have lots of email questions. Let's take an email question. It's been sitting for a while from Dawn in Madison. What is dry needling? And it's been suggested I have it done for my upper left shoulder on my back. I was told it needs to be done by a PT who specializes in doing this near the lung area. Lung puncture issues.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
My goodness. The needles
yes.
go in that far.
Well, no. I mean, then you do have to acknowledge the anatomical structures below what you are dry needling. But dry needling is something that physical therapists can do in the state of Wisconsin. We can do it. There are more and more people getting trained in therapeutic dry needling. I have been trained in it, and I use it all the time. So kind of the theory behind it is you have those trigger points in your muscles, those knots in your muscles, where there's an area of hypovascularity or an area where there's just not good oxygen supply to that knot. And you try everything you can to get rid of it. You massage it, you stretch it, and yet it still won't go away. So one of the things physical therapists can do is they can actually insert a needle. It's an acupuncture type needle, very, very small, directly into that trigger point. And when you do that, it creates a twitch response. So it makes the muscle kind of contract non-voluntarily. Mm-hmm. And so you get a little twitch response. And how I explain it in the simplest of terms is basically what I'm trying to do is break up that area of hypovascularity. So physical therapists are trained to do this. And yes, you have to know your anatomy very well. I think she's probably talking about the upper trapezius muscle, which I dry needle on a regular basis. And it's very easy to avoid a lung. You have to appreciate that the lung is there, but you can move your angle such that and not use a needle that's so long that you can successfully get rid of trigger points within the upper trap muscle.
But go to somebody who knows what they're doing.
Correct. That's exactly. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yes. There's lots of PTs that are currently practicing that, and I think it would benefit her.
All right. I want to take Stacy in Cottage Grove next. Stacy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. So I don't know what you know, but I was in a car accident about 5 years ago, and I was rear-ended with an impact of 25 miles an hour or greater, and my seat had
broke in several places, and I never let go of the steering wheel. And so my seat actually took on the curvature of my son's seat, which was right behind me. So my body was stretched, basically folded in half due to this. So over the course of 5 years, I've seen many chiropractors. I'm going through another round of physical therapy, and it just seems like a lot of people don't have an explanation for my pain. It feels like they don't understand what's going on. It's not.
Yeah.
I don't think it's just.
And the pain is.
Where's the pain, Stacey?
It actually varies depending on the day.
Sure.
But lately, it's mostly in my right shoulder.
Okay.
And initially, it was right after the car accident. It was every joint in my body.
Sure. Okay.
Ankles, wrists, elbows, shoulders, entire spine. I also had issues right after the car accident where I couldn't hold my head up.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I wake up, my neck would be frozen and my arms would be frozen. So I had to grab one finger with one hand and just kind of barely loosen up my shoulders.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then I would have to manually go up to my head and turn it. And then to get up, actually hold my neck and kind of roll or fall out of bed.
No. So so you said you've seen everyone. You're under a physician's care for this?
Yes.
Okay. A primary care, what, a specialist of some sort?
Initially, it was just the primary, or like the assistant to the doctor.
Okay, sure. Yeah.
And then, so I really haven't seen my real doctor for this, so to speak, but I have gone through physical therapy. I've gone through pain management.
Okay.
And it just, even with all these people that are supposed to be experts, it seems like they're not getting what I'm saying. They don't seem to get the severity of just how far my body was stretched.
So that's really the role of the pain management specialist. If you've gone through a pain management program where they've put you in structured physical therapy, maybe some occupational therapy, where they've talked about medication or other pain management techniques, where you've attended a class on pain management. I mean, that's the purpose of that program is those people, you know, their role and their specialty is understanding the magnitude of your pain and helping you deal with that. You know, they're not necessarily going to make your pain go away, but the purpose is to sort of acknowledge it, to get you in a rehabilitation program that can build you up as best you can while managing your pain.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've been through that kind of a program, I'm not sure what other advice we could offer other than I would hope and assume that you're continuing an exercise program that you've been initiated on.
Yes.
By physical therapy?
Yep.
Okay. And if that's not working for you, then it might make sense to go back and see somebody because people do change over time.
Right.
And what worked for you, you know, 6 months ago or a year ago or 2 years ago, whatever you were set up on, may not be the right program for you now. So it's reasonable to go back and be reassessed and have that program retuned for you based upon where you're at now.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah, it seems like I've been kind of tossed around from one to another, that nobody is actually following my care.
Well, that's that's the purpose of the pain management group, is that they are responsible for all aspects of your care, and that person there is central to managing all the components of that pain management program.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call, Stacy. I'm sorry for your pain.
Right,
oh,
that's
goodness.
Very frustrating.
It's really
very,
tough.
Very tough.
And people do go from one specialist to another because, you know, they'll see somebody and they'll say, you know, this isn't rheumatology, or they'll see the spine specialist and they'll say, you know, that it's not really coming from your spine and you may have hip pain, so then they'll send you to the hip person. And you do tend to get tossed around, which is why going through the pain management program makes sense, because they are supposed to be taking a big picture view of everything.
And let's turn to John and Stevens Point next. John, hello. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I have a fairly new knee issue. I'm pretty active, and I'm actually a 45-year-old skateboarder, but that's not what did it to me this time. I'm feeling a pain behind my knee that just appeared one day after getting up from kneeling on the floor, and I don't experience pain walking or even when I've been rolling around a little on my skateboard, but it does hurt back there. And the one thing that I thought was strange is I tripped the other day. I didn't fall, but the motion of moving my leg very quickly like that gave me a shooting pain. Mm-hmm. So that's a strange injury.
Is there any swelling back there, John, or is there like a palpable lump or anything like that on the back of your knee?
No, in fact, that was one of the first things I checked for, and I have been checking for, and I'm doing right now.
Okay.
and I haven't felt any really swelling. There's a slight bit of discomfort when I kneel, which I don't fortunately have to do that much. But and then there is a little bit of discomfort on either side, right below the kneecap. There's the little divots on either side.
Uh-huh. That's your joint line.
Yeah, and I'm feeling a little discomfort there sometimes, but typically when I'm just sitting around, like, I'm not feeling it. But mm-hmm. that sharp pain was when I just sort of caught my foot on a root mm-hmm. doing some yard work.
Mm-hmm. Right. So this came on, it's in the back of your knee, and it came on after you were kneeling. So when you were in that position, what happens is you can compress your meniscus. So that back part of your meniscus, that nice padding we have in your knee, could have been compressed a little bit. And irritated. So that's why when you go back in that position and you kind of pinch or compress, it's irritating. Same thing holds true when you did that sudden rapid movement. The meniscus have to move around in your knee a little bit as you swing your leg around, and that fast movement could have just irritated your meniscus as well.
You could have just a little bit of a degenerative meniscal, you know, scuffing in the back of your knee, or on your joint surface, you could have a little bit of wear and tear, arthritis. And when you were in that kneeling position for a long period of time, your knee doesn't really like that because you're putting a tremendous amount of pressure on your meniscus and on your joint surfaces. And the way your joint surfaces and your meniscus get their nutrition is by sort of weighting and unweighting. So if you think of your meniscus like a little sponge, when you're in that full kneeling position, you've squeezed all the fluid on it. It's kind of going like this, not getting any nutrition. Do you like the sound effects?
I did.
Yeah. It's not getting any nutrition. And then, and so it can make it sore. So
that's interesting. Okay, yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, so I'd continue to do your walking. I'd probably do a little stretching. I'd stay out of the full kneeling position.
In the pool.
Yeah, I'll get in the pool, sure. Yeah. And just see if it recovers over the next few weeks.
Good luck,
but
John.
But, you know, it's probably there, so it may rear its ugly head every mm-hmm. now and again. You just got to be nice to your knee.
Mm-hmm.
Good luck. Thanks again for calling. I want to go to Nancy in Wauwatosa next. Nancy, hello. Thanks for calling. Nancy?
Hello?
Hi. Are you there?
Yes.
What's on recently, your mind?
Well, I'm having a hip issue, and I was recently had an MRI done, and it indicated that there was a labral tear within the hip
mm-hmm.
with some hamstring tendinosis and some edema in the front of the muscle, quadricep muscle.
Okay.
Is surgery necessary?
No. So, you know, it's very interesting that you say that, Nancy, because we have this wonderful technology of MRIs, and sometimes what we see on MRI doesn't even really correlate or associate with our pain. And so there's probably people walking around with hip labral tears that don't even know they have them. So it sounds to me like you have a couple other things going on. You have some tendinosis in your hamstring and a little bit of edema in your quadriceps in the front. Have you had a course of physical therapy yet, Nancy?
No, I have not.
So I think the first thing to do would be to see a physical therapist and get on a really nice flexibility and strengthening program so you can dissipate the load that goes through your hip to surrounding musculature so you don't have to load your hip joint so much. And start with that and see how you do.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that. And as Jill said, you know, you see something on MRI and then all of a sudden people think something has to be done. And when we first developed the MRI technology at the hip, we found a lot of hip labral tears. And everyone said, aha, that's, you know, why you've been having hip pain. And so they go in and, you know, try to fix the labrum. And now the labrum is sort of following the same path as the meniscus at the knee.
Correct.
You know, they're similar tissues where when people had a meniscus tear at the knee, they'd say, oh, we have to go in and remove it and this and that. And then they found out that, gosh, some of these tears were better left in place and people did better if they didn't go mess around with it. And we're starting to get there on the hip also. So I get in a good course of PT, deal with right. the tendonitises, get some strengthening. And, you know, if you're not turning the corner, surgery is always available down the road. But right. it would not be the first choice.
Right, exactly. And so let's go the conservative route and try everything else first.
And thanks a lot for calling,
Nancy. Absolutely. It's a great question.
And Leon DePere, thank you for calling. What can we do for you?
Yeah, thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I am a saxophone player, and I'm a saxophone playing son of a gun, by the way.
Excellent.
But didn't your son play the saxophone?
My son still plays the saxophone, the tenor saxophone.
Oh, that's awesome. That's what I play.
Awesome. Good for you. Love the tenor sax. So anyway, back to your question. Lee, are you there? Did you go off to play?
Uh-oh.
Oh, we must have lost him.
How did that happen?
I don't know. He's suddenly gone.
He got so excited about
the tennis. And he has tennis elbow.
Oh, man. Saxophone elbow.
Yeah.
Well, we can talk about it.
Yes. You can address that since you know more the mechanics of the tenor sax.
Oh, well, yeah.
So, oh, wait. Does your son ever practice? Do you know what it looks like to play the tenor sax?
I only see him play it in a concert. Oh, I shouldn't say that because his teacher might be listening. He assumes he plays. He does have a saxophone at home. But in any case. So, it's repetitive finger movement. So it's a lot of fingering along with wrist flexion. So the one of the factors is to, when you're holding the saxophone, to make sure that your wrists are not overly flexed so that the muscles that extend on the backside of your hand don't have to overwork so hard. Another thing would be to make sure you're not gripping the saxophone so hard. And, you know, you probably get into your music and it's hard not to grip it. So hard. Another strategy would be to use a wrist splint, at least while you're practicing at home, and that will help take some of the strain off of your elbow. And then finally, since this is something you love to do, I would go see a physical therapist and have them, and bring your saxophone along. Yeah, bring your saxophone along and have them look at your posture on it. And there are physical therapists who specialize in performing arts, specifically music. So depending upon where you live, I can't remember where you live. DePere. Where's DePere?
Green Bay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Green Bay.
Yeah, I'm sure there's somebody there who specializes in performing arts, and you can call around to the PT clinics and ask, do you have anyone who specializes in performing arts? And you can take your instrument and have them look at your posture and how you move and how you hold it to see if there's anything that should be done.
Right. It's absolutely no different than watching a baseball player hold his bat or a hockey player hold their stick. It's the exact same concept.
And the other interesting thing about it is something that you mentioned earlier. Saxophone is a two-handed technique. So why is he having symptoms on one side? And I don't know if he's doing more fingering with one hand than the other. Mm-hmm. But I would want to look at that.
Mm-hmm. We got an email question from Kristen, who's been suffering from plantar fasciitis for 3 years. She's tried everything. I recently had an MRI which shows my fascia to be over 6 millimeters thick. Doctor says the next step is surgery, but put me in PT as a last-ditch effort to avoid it. Committed to PT regimens, but I'm not super optimistic. I'm active, and this is impacting things I like to do. So my question is, when does surgery make sense with this, and what, if any, are your concerns with surgery for plantar fasciitis?
Well, that's a great question. And it's hard to say how much this thickness in her plantar fascia is contributing to her symptoms. So my first thought is, when you've been dealing with this for so long and you've tried all these things, is that really your source of symptoms? Is that your pain generator? In other words, do we need to look elsewhere? Sounds like she's going to physical therapy again, which is great. Physical therapists can dry needle in the area in the plantar aspect of the foot. There's a couple muscles down there, the quadratus plantae, that can be dry needled, and many times they are irritants causing heel pain and plantar fasciitis, so that is an option as well. And then the question about surgery with somebody who has plantar fasciitis. So what they do is they go in and they actually cut your plantar fascia. Yeah, and it's kind of like the meniscus in the knee. We used to take them all out thinking they were no big deal, but it does really serve a purpose to support the bottom of your foot.
It'd be a last
absolute last
ditch effort, and I assume that Kristen's done everything, like night splints, and people have looked at leg length differences, right, and mechanics, and all those things that are contributing factors. And as Jill said, looking at the differential diagnosis, she has had an MRI, which is helpful. But I don't know how much the thickness is really an issue.
Right. I'd be curious what her thickness is on her other side.
Yeah,
I mean, she may have just have thick plantar fascia.
Right.
So that's a tough case.
Yeah.
That's a hard thing.
Yeah.
Stephen Oshkosh wondered if you ever recommend ibuprofen to people after injuries to reduce swelling.
Not in the first 24 hours.
Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't you?
Because it can impact the healing process. So you need those cytokines and things like that, those chemotactic factors, to come to the area to initiate the healing process. And the anti-inflammatories can inhibit that. I would recommend things like Tylenol, just pain control in the first 24 hours. And then thereafter, you can switch to an anti-inflammatory.
Yep. And Barbara and Oshkosh, do you have a quick question?
Yes, I do. It's a tendonitis day. I have tendonitis in my shoulder, and I've been dealing with it for almost 2 years, trying different things. I had physical therapy. It didn't help. What helped the most was deep tissue massage. And the surgeon, I went to surgeon too, he said he wanted to also, like the lady with the foot, cut the tendon a little bit to loosen it.
So is this your biceps tendon?
It is the one right at the top of my shoulder. I'm not sure.
In the front of your shoulder?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
So he's probably talking about doing a biceps tenodesis or tenotomy. And interestingly, this is probably that one very rare bird where you can tenodesis or kind of relocate the tendon. So you take it out of its groove and reattach it, and the tendon still functions just fine, and it's a viable option. And anecdotally, one of our shoulder surgeons here in town does it frequently, and we get good results.
Well,
there you have it.
One time where it actually works well.
And it's a relocation of the tendon. They kind of move the insertion so it's not in such a congested area of your shoulder.
Yeah.
And they feel that many times is the pain generator, and people do okay. But I would, Barbara, absolutely exhaust all your conservative measures before you go and do that. Because, again, it sounds easy, but it's still a surgery. You're changing the mechanics of the shoulder.
And with that, we're finished for the day. You guys are going to be back on December 14th, so a little early next month.
Yes.
Awesome.
Thanks so
much. It'll be great. I wonder if it'll snow by then.
I thought they used the flurry word this weekend.
The flurry word.
The flurry word.
Yeah. Okay.
There we go. Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum from the University of Wisconsin Sports Medicine and Spine Center and the Doctor of Physical Therapy program. Thanks so much to them. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.